Welcome to The Conversation on Coast Community Radio. My name is Graham Nystrom, and I'll be your host today. The Conversation is our live call-in show, where you can weigh in on the topic of the week. We're listening to It Rains Love by Lee Fields and the Expressions as our theme song today. And today's topic is the path to social justice, racial equality, and a better future for everyone. Looking forward to hearing from you about what your thoughts are on the current state of things. How are the protests going? How is legislation going? I saw that George Floyd's brother is appealing to the United Nations. I noticed that the protests kind of went global. This is not just an issue in America. Institutionalized racism is not just a problem that we experience within our borders. Sounds like it's an issue everywhere, and I have a lot of faith that George Floyd's brother's work is going to create some action in the direction that we're looking to take things. We're looking to take action as a station as well, and we hope you'll join us by calling in today and expressing your thoughts and your concerns and asking your questions about what's going on in the world right now. 503-325-0010. We've got three open lines, and I'm happy to start this off, but don't wait to call. Call in right now. I want to start with a short quote from Darren Lashelle. I read the full quote last week, and this is great. We've already got a call, but I'm going to read this quote really fast. Words matter, but I think actions matter more. As a media organization, we have a responsibility to take steps to actively encourage positive change and not just participate, but lead community discussion. We have an important role to play in examining, revealing, and dismantling racism. We need to provoke discussion and seek solutions. Public media has always given those without a voice the opportunity to tell their story. So here at KMUN, we are turning up that megaphone and setting an example for our community. We're searching for ways to learn, understand, and connect, and perhaps together we can find our way through these challenging times. So I made that last bit a little bit our own, but thank you, Darren Lashelle from NorCal Public Media, for that very inspiring quote. Okay, so we're starting off strong with the callers. Caller number one, you are on the air. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. I just want to say that I've been thinking a lot, because I hear a lot about the bad apples. And as a gardener and a farmer, I know that you can't just say one bad apple in a box or barrel, because it rots the whole box or barrel if you don't get rid of it. And that's with apples. With humans, I think a better label is predator. We have predators that hide in the uniforms of law enforcement in all branches, in the military, in the religions, in the churches, in the homes, in the communities, and we all know who they are. We recognize the predators as children in our families and growing up and in the workplace, and I just love that we're getting rid of, we're on the way. Get rid of these predators and get them out of our midst so that our children, the part that bothers me are the children that are molested and killed and women that are murdered and raped. It's worldwide. The racism, the hatred, they're not bad apples. These people are predators.
Well said.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I just said well said. I agree with you.
That's all I've got. That's it for now. I'll start that off.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you for getting us going today, and thank you for the call.
Mm-hmm, bye.
So in our efforts to be community leaders here at the station, I want to share with you a conversation that I had and our program director had with a woman named Dr. Latoya Brackett yesterday. Sorry, I'm multitasking again. I should know better. Let me get this next caller on the air. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I'm concerned. I have a mix. In my family, there are blacks married to whites, and they have, children that are coffee-colored.
Sir, there's a delay on our broadcast. Do you mind turning your radio down while you talk?
Oh, I'm sorry. Sure.
Yep,
hang on. I'm very concerned about the safety of everybody like that, because it is so very strange these days. I mean, they're in the Northwest, there's the Seattle area, but still, I have deep and serious trepidation, especially about the 23-year-old, because he's a really nice young man. He has a job, he goes to school, and he's just like everybody else, you know? But I worry, I'm exceptionally worried about those folks. And all we can do is just pray that everything is fine and he doesn't find himself in a situation that he gets pulled over by some cop that's got an attitude or some punk that's got an attitude. So I guess that's my contribution.
Well, I agree with you, and I respect your concern. I think that Oregon being a predominantly white state, which is something that I had planned to talk about a little bit today, the history of racism, the history of exclusion of blacks from the state of Oregon and the Oregon Territory before it became a state. But I think what we can do as part of our work is to acknowledge, you know, not just your fear as a father or a family member, but the fear that that person feels every time that they step out the door.
I agree. I absolutely agree, bro.
And that's part of the white privilege that I think it's best that we all make the effort to wrap our
yeah.
heads around.
I don't know if you saw that movie, The Green Book or not, Graham, but it's definitely worth seeing.
I saw it. It was great.
Yeah, and that's an issue. That was in the Northwest is notorious for having racial issues. Of course, that was back in the 60s, but what's changed? I mean, seriously, I don't know exactly how much has changed since then, you know? I'm an old guy. I'm almost 77 years old, and nothing seems like it's changed. I was overseas in the Marines back in the 60s in Okinawa, and there were racial issues then between the black troops and the white troops, for God's sakes. We're all on the same side. We're supposed to be against the bad guys, but when everybody's the bad guy, what do? You know? So I just don't know. It's frustrating. I know that I will not see a solution to this in my lifetime that I have left, but one can only pray that it'll at some point everybody will become equal.
Well, hey, I never thought I'd see the legalization of marijuana in my lifetime. So, hey, there's hope.
There is that.
There's hope.
Yeah, you're right, man. Okay, well, thanks, Graham. Thanks for doing this show.
Thanks for the call.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. So we spoke with Latoya Brackett yesterday. Latoya is a visiting assistant professor of African American Studies and the Race and Pedagogy Institute at the University of Puget Sound. Her website is latoyabrackett.com. She's an intercultural consultant and founder of Perception. Perception principles are truth, honesty, accountability, approachability, availability, and action. And from her website, I found a couple of profound quotes. There's an African proverb that says, "If it's about us, without us, it is not for us." And another African proverb that said, "If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together." And so hopefully that's what we're doing right now to that last caller. We might make some progress. And then one of Latoya's favorite quotes is, "I only desire to lift as I climb." And so I appreciate the fact that she's acknowledging that in her life, she's not perfect and has ground to gain. And we all do. And we can all lift each other up as we make that journey up the hill. So I appreciated Latoya's conversation with us. And one of the things that she recommended that we do as a station, and we plan to, is get a book called "Is Everyone Really Equal? An Introduction to Key Concepts in Social Justice Education." So in case you're interested in picking up a copy of this, I'll read that title one more time while you grab a pen. The book is called "Is Everyone Really Equal? An Introduction to Key Concepts in Social Justice Education." One of the authors of that book is the writer of a book called White Fragility, that's also being talked about a great deal right now. And so that might be another good tome for you to pick up as you work to educate yourself and work on making progress. Let's see, I read you that Darren Lachelle quote, and I do see a call coming in, so we're going to put you on the air. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, Graham, it's Mike Covert. How are you doing?
I'm good, Mike. How are you?
Not bad. Well, I guess I'm not quite sure where to start out. Obviously, there's a lot of things happening in our society right now. from marches and protests. Certainly, you know, movement to take down statues, Confederate symbols, changing names of forts that that are named for Confederate leaders or whatnot. But there is an incident that happened on Wednesday in Portland that I'm a little upset about, and it shows that I think things can be taken too far sometimes. The University of Portland had a statue of William Clark with standing with his slave York on Wads Bluff, which is on the campus of the University of Portland, and him and Clark York, and also a Native American who was from I guess the Multnomah tribe. I believe they had camped close by to the Willamette River the night before. I'm not quite sure what the dates were, but I think it was 1806 in March. At any rate, you know, here's a statue that depicts three different races of men. You know, in the core of the discovery, you got William Clark, the leader. You got York, a slave, you know, who was treated in many respects as an equal in the core, and a Native American. And so now here's a statue that's celebrating an African American, and yet it was a target of vandalism and taken down. And I just think, boy, you know, where does it all go? You know, I mean, protests are great, and people need to be heard. There needs to be a lot of healing in this country, particularly with the race issues. I mean, it's unconscionable what's going on, the lynching of black men in this country. It's just, it's horrible. But I guess that's what I have to say. And
Mike, I'm glad you brought up the lynchings. I think that that's one of the scariest things that I've seen in my lifetime. It's just horrible.
Oh, I mean, what's going on across this country right now? I mean, for police departments or media or anybody to say that these are suicides, finding black men hanging in trees, I mean, it's an outrage. It's
unconscionable.
Unbelievable. But at any rate, the story about the statues, it's a little personal to me because my father was the one who actually had this the statue commissioned. He was a historian at the University of Portland, and he had an artist named Michael Dante create the statue, and they went out of their way to depict a statue that was inclusive in celebrating the life of an African American who was indeed a slave, but, you know, had his, you know, his freedom given to him by William Clark. And some of these points of history are completely, you know, washed off the face of, well, let's just say they're not highly known points of history. And when I would like to see more statues of Native American, African Americans who have contributed to our society. And when we have to remove statues of those types of things, I mean, it's just sad to me, I guess.
Well, I hope that there can be some resolution to that. I agree with you. I think I agree with you that sounds like a bad decision to vandalize and remove that statue.
Yeah, but anyway, that's just, you know, but it's understandable to see the outrage and the anger over, you know, statues of Robert E. Lee, maybe, or whoever in the South, and particularly on these campuses that have traditionally, you know, been, you know, involved in slavery and whatnot. Yeah, I would think that those statues are pretty offensive. People have to confront them every single day.
Mm-hmm.
So,
one of the things that Latoya Brackett said yesterday was just examining the difference between quantitative data versus qualitative analysis. And so it seems to me like the statue sort of falls under that, where there seems to have been a lack of qualitative analysis happening.
Right.
Rather than just, you know, adding one digit to the number of statues that have been taken down in the name of racial justice.
Right.
Mike, thanks for the call.
You betcha. Have a good day.
You too. One of the things that we discussed with Dr. Brackett yesterday was our vocabulary. the quote from Darren Lashelle says, words matter, but I think actions matter more. And so looking at the ways that words matter, one thing that I'm concerned about as a station manager and just as a person who wants to be a part of this movement is what words are we using and are we being politically correct? And there's a lot of caution around the words that we use. And so we had an enlightening discussion about that, and she really reinforced that that's where that book that I mentioned earlier could come in handy, the book called Is Everyone Really Equal? An Introduction to Key Concepts in Social Justice Education. And so we talked a little bit about cultural awareness. We talked a little bit about what brown people would want to be called, LGBTQIA plus people, black people, native indigenous people and tribes. So she used things like communities of color, persons of color. She said black and brown. She said people with disabilities. She mentioned a few interesting things to me or to us about that Latino implies Latin America, and the O at the end also implies masculine. And so there's a movement to say Latinx to try to not be male-centered. She also mentioned that the term Chicano described Mexican Americans, and that term became popular during the labor movement. She mentioned that Hispanic is an ethnicity and not a race, and that Hispanic is the term of the oppressor, the Spanish people. So there's so much to learn, and there's so much work to do to gain confidence in how we even talk about this. And speaking of talking about it, I would love to talk about it with you. And so why don't you give me a call, 503-325-0010. Thanks to our callers so far. I really, really enjoy doing this program, and I would not enjoy it if you did not call. So I look forward to hearing from you. We've got three open lines. So we're going to work on our vocabulary here at the station as a staff, and then we hope that we can push some of the things that we're learning outward into the community, because I think it's important to be able to talk about things and not constantly second-guess yourself around your word choice, because that only gets in the way of your thought process and your ability to communicate. And so we hope to have confidence in the words that we're using, that we're using respectful words. And one of the big takeaways from Dr. Brackett is just ask people how they want to be referred to, because you might not get the same answer. And the discussion around pronouns is often a great way to start, especially with the LGBTQIA plus communities. Quantitative data is nothing compared to the qualitative analysis. Latoya mentioned walking past a homeless person stretched out on the sidewalk in Portland and having to step over or step around, and that this was a white homeless person. And she felt that there was no way that a black homeless person would be allowed to do that. And so that was her example of looking at the quantitative data versus the qualitative analysis, and just putting yourself in a person's shoes who has to have those concerns when they walk out the door every day. We've got another caller. Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. You know, the statue or the bas-relief in front of the state capitol in Salem has always really bothered me. It has the one side. The woman has to kneel down so that she's no taller than the boy and much shorter than the man. The other side, the Indian is leading the man on the horse to the far, to the western sun and the extension of our empire or something like that. And the quotes under the statue, under the bas-relief, also I find very offensive from both the Native American side and as a feminist. And I'm glad also just about the Black Lives Matter, because only with cell phone footage do we realize how year after year for hundreds of years people of color have been brutally treated. And I had one more quote, but I think it left my mind. I know about York. I think one of the things that people find so distressing about York is he had such an important role and was such a savior at times in the Lewis and Clark expedition. And then I forgot if it was Lewis or Clark who owned him. And when they returned home again, York was not set free. He was right back to being a slave in every way in the Midwest. So that was those are my comments.
Well, it would be nice to get a statue of York that just celebrates his role and also mourns his slavery.
Yes, that would be perfect.
Thanks for the call.
And then I would love on some Indigenous Day to have the bas-relief in the front of our state capitol in Salem to have the woman on the horse and the Indian on the horse leading back to his empire or so, you know, words underneath. Maybe we can dress up the images and then underneath redo the dialogue.
Well, you know who to write, right?
Which one? not Betsy Johnson. Not Senator Johnson. She'd be hopeless, but...
Well, everybody you can.
Alrighty. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
So we talked a little bit about vocabulary and language. Another thing that Dr. Brackett encouraged us to work on is exploring our history here in Oregon. I touched on that at the top of the show. Oregon and the Oregon Territory, before it became a state, was highly exclusionary to blacks. And so, as a station, we'll be making an effort to show the history of racism in Oregon. Racial history in Oregon. Why does Oregon look the way it looks? We plan to explore that as a station. She mentioned that we might want to be sure to access non-white historians as well. White historians may not be able to tell that story as well as a person of color. One comment she made that I thought was interesting was the transformation of the plantation and slave labor into the modern day world. Of her two examples were the music industry and athletics. And the people that run those industries are not black, but the people that generate all the income, the people that have all the talent, all the skill, are black. And so that's is that something that you think about very often? I don't think about it very often, but I'm thinking about it today. If you're just joining us, this is The Conversation on Coast Community Radio. It's a call-in show, and the number is 503-325-0010. And we've got about 7 minutes left in the show. I'd love to hear from you. We've got three open lines. I pulled up an article from the Washington Post called Oregon's Shameful History as an All-White State. In 1844, all black people were ordered to get out of Oregon Country, the expansive territory under American rule that stretched from the Pacific coast to the Rocky Mountains. Those who refused to leave could be severely whipped. The provisional government law declared by no less than 20 or more than 39 stripes, to repeat it every 6 months until they left. That law became known as the Peter Burnett Lash Law. Burnett, who also opposed Chinese migration to Oregon Country, would later become the first American governor of California. He moves to the territory as a slave owner from Missouri, I believe it said. And so the Lash Law was quickly amended and then repealed. No black people were ever lashed under the law, but the act would become the first of three exclusion laws that shaped the Pacific Northwest, banning any additional black people from coming to Oregon Country. Those laws created what one African-American professor calls a very hostile environment that has long made Oregon and its largest city, Portland, a stronghold for white supremacists like Jeremy Joseph Christian, the man accused of killing two men and severely wounding another on a light rail train. That was just a few years ago in Portland. Not many people are aware of Oregon's history of blatant racism, including its refusal to ratify the 14th and 15th Amendments of the Constitution. 503-325-0010, just 4 minutes left in the show. Do you have any comments about the state of things? I think the protests have some real momentum, but we need it to turn into legislation. We need it to turn into change. Has anyone seen this happening yet? I keep hearing about police unions. We've heard from Astoria Police Department Chief Spalding a couple times about the quality of the Astoria Police Department. I wonder if he would be interested in speaking to the police unions and whether or not that is part of the problem that maybe we don't experience here in Astoria, but is a part of the problem in the rest of the country. It's something that kind of keeps coming up on my radar. And so it seems like that would be the place to start. But I'm just a radio station manager. A few minutes left in the show. Love to hear from you. 503-325-0010. I'm sorry this isn't a more uplifting episode, but it is Juneteenth today. This is the day that slavery was abolished. And we have reverence for this day here at the station. And I hope you do too. More from the article about the history of racism in Oregon then. In 1857, as Oregon sought to become a state, it wrote the exclusion of blacks into its constitution. This is a quote: "No free Negro or mulatto not residing in this state at the time of the adoption of this constitution shall ever come, reside, or be within this state, or hold any real estate, or make any contract, or maintain any suit therein. And the Legislative Assembly shall provide by penal laws for the removal by public officers of all such free Negroes and mulattoes, and for their effectual exclusion from the state, and for the punishment of persons who shall bring them into the state, or employ or harbor them therein." End quote. When Oregon entered the Union in 1859, it did so as a whites-only state. The original state constitution banned slavery, but also excluded non-whites from living there. Quote, "Oregon is the only state in the United States that actually began as literally whites-only," said Winston Grady Willis, director of Portland State University's School of Gender, Race, and Nations. Even though there was subsequent legislation that challenged those statutes, the statutes were not removed from the books until 1922. Close quote. Portland's reputation as a progressive city is largely a myth. Portland remains the whitest large city in the United States, according to a July 2015 census report. The city of 612,206 people was 77.6% white and 5.8% black. Grady Willis called it a key site for Klan activity. I moved to Portland in 2003. I was raised in Southern California, a more diverse area in what I thought was a post-racist world. But looking back on those years, I can identify a subtext of racism amongst some of my school friends, in sports, even among teachers in my schools. But moving to Oregon, it was a shock to my system. It was completely different, and I did not know this history. And so I hope that this is something that we can all be more and more aware of, because I think it's important. We don't get to play the, well, there aren't that many black people card here, because this is why. And I hope you're shocked. I hope you're appalled. And I hope that you'll raise your voice, if not on this show, then out at a protest. I hope you'll write a letter to the editor. I hope you'll write a congressperson, a senator. Let's keep this momentum going. You're listening to KMUN Astoria, 91.9 FM, KTCB Tillamook, 89.5 FM, and streaming on the web at coastradio.org. This has been The Conversation. My name is Graham Nystrom. It's a pleasure to be your host every Friday morning. Stay tuned for headline news at 10:01, followed by Friday Folk with the one and only Albert Smith. We've got some special programming coming up later today as the station does its part to celebrate Juneteenth. You can tune in at 1 o'clock from 1 to 4 p.m. We will be preempting Thistle and Shamrock, E-Town, and Arts Live and Local today in order to bring this special Juneteenth programming to you. Thanks again for listening. Tune in next week for another episode of The Conversation.